Hello and welcome back to Ancient and New, a Bible study podcast. I am your host, Lee Younger from Christ Community Church in Oak Ridge, and we are back with our journey through the Gospel of Mark. Today we're going to look at familiar stories, Jesus calming the storm, the woman who reached out for the hem of his robe, and the feeding of the 5,000. I think the challenge with these is to hear these familiar stories afresh, to open your heart to hear them as if for the first time. All right, here we go. Mark 4, 35 through 41. That day when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let's go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." If your emotional state was being described by a meteorologist, what would they say about how you're doing today? Are you feeling partly cloudy with a chance of scattered showers? Are you feeling like clear blue sky, 72 degrees and sunny with a nice breeze? Or are you feeling like a torrential downpour with high winds, low visibility, and a tornado warning? Sometimes problems roll into our lives like devastating natural disasters. We find ourselves in the middle of a storm, just trying to hang on to the wreckage and keep our feet. Maybe your storm is your family or a relationship you didn't want to lose. Maybe it's the results of choices you've made, and then again, maybe it's just really bad luck, but we all have storms. We have storms that are too big for us to control or even manage on our own, and one of the deepest, most troubling questions we have to face in the midst of those storms is, where is Jesus? One time, Jesus and his friends were in a boat on the lake when a huge and furious storm broke open out of nowhere. The boat was being tossed. The men were straining at the oars, and Jesus was asleep on a pillow in the front of the boat. These guys were fighting for their lives on tumultuous waves with raging winds and the rain pelting them from every side, while Jesus slept on a pillow. They woke him up, screaming, "Don't you care that we're dying?" And Jesus stood up, told the storm to hush, and immediately it became completely still and quiet, with water like a sheet of glass. When problems hit us, our hearts gravitate toward the most extreme emotional reaction, that Jesus doesn't care about us, and he's just going to sit there and let the worst happen to us. When the fact is, Jesus already knows everything that's going to happen, and he has the power to instantly change our situation in any way he wants to. He loves us outrageously, and he can do anything, which means that if something terrible is happening to us, the only plausible explanation is that Jesus is letting this thing happen on purpose. The problem is we don't always know his reasons. We'll hardly ever know his reasons, but he knows why he's doing it. The storm that hit the disciples was completely outside of their control, but Jesus made it vanish in an instant. Not only that, but he was with them the entire time. He loves us. He's with us. And he can change this impossible situation just as soon as he wants to, which means that somehow there is something I need in the storm I'm in. There's something we need in our storms, even if we don't know what it is. When they first got into the boat, Jesus said, "Let's go to the other side." He always knew they would make it, alive and well. The storm was too big for the disciples, but not for him. Jesus shut down their overwhelming problem with a word. And he cares about your storms, and they aren't too big for him to handle. There has to be a reason he's allowing it to go on, because he could solve it just as soon as he wants to. And even when it feels like he's just sleeping through your problems, he's there the whole time, in the boat with you. And at any moment, he may stand and say, "Hush." 1 Peter 5:7. Cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. Mark 5:25-34. A woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately, her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and yet you can ask, 'Who touched me?'" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." What if everyone knew your deepest, darkest problem? What would you do? I know I'd probably want to run away. What if the thing you don't want anyone to know was suddenly front page news? I think most folks would be embarrassed and afraid of being judged, even though so many of us share the exact same struggles without knowing it. The funny thing is that when a person is forced to open up and share their secrets, they almost always wind up feeling set free by it. I mean, it's terrifying to be vulnerable, and yet it can be liberating to tell the whole truth. One time, in the middle of a crowded street, a very sick woman touched Jesus' clothes because she figured that even one little touch would heal her. And she was right. Turned out she had been suffering with constant menstrual bleeding for 12 years, which meant that not only was she weak and sick, but she was also ceremonially unclean. In other words, she was a completely isolated social outcast for more than a decade. Wow. When you're reading all the details of this woman's condition and history, it's easy to kind of wonder how Mark knew it all. But he tells us that Jesus stopped the crowd and singled this woman out. Which is weird, because the miracle was already done, and Jesus could have ignored this event without embarrassing her further. But in verse 33, Mark says, Jesus insisted that this lady tell her whole story. Everyone in that crowd heard of her pain and loneliness. They all found out that she had spent all her money only to suffer more. And they all found out that she was now completely healed. Jesus didn't need to stop the crowd that day. He knew exactly who touched him. He didn't need to make a big public spectacle out of what had just happened. In John chapter 2, he kept that water into wine miracle a secret on purpose. Jesus made this woman tell her whole story so that everyone else would know that she was new, clean, and healed. This was her ticket right back into community life. He knew that telling the whole story would be good for her and it would help people to understand her pain more. What if Jesus wants to fix you, but he doesn't want to stop with what's on the surface? What if he wants to handle your problems in such a way that it heals your emotions as well? In some ways, this moment in the crowd may have been the most embarrassing thing she had ever done. But Jesus was orchestrating all of this on purpose. He didn't want to simply heal her physically. He was healing her emotionally. And Jesus knows your deepest issues, and at times he will do things you don't like or understand in order to fix all of it. His ways can be difficult, and his timing can be infuriating, but he knows what he's doing, and he's doing all of it for you, for your best, so that you can not only be healed, but also whole. Romans 8:28. And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Mark 6:35-44. By this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said, "and it's already very late. Send these people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered, "You give them something to eat." They said to him, "That would take 8 months of a man's wages. Are we going to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "How many loaves do you have?" he asked. "Go and see." When they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to set before the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of men who had eaten was 5,000. You have a hunger deep inside you for things you can't quite seem to satisfy. And the reason I know this is true about you is that it's true about me as well. It's true about everyone around you, even that person who seems like they have it all together. No matter who you are, you're hungry. And no matter what you try to do to fill up, that hunger always comes back. You're hungry for acceptance. You're hungry for worth. You're hungry for love. You want to be wanted. You want to be special. You want people to miss you when you're gone, and you want that room to go crazy when you finally show up. You're hungry for a life where your needs are met and things around you are stable, steady, and peaceful. You want to know where that next meal is coming from, and you don't want to have to be afraid about that. There are so many things you're hungry for, and the problem is that no matter what you do to fill up, it only works for a little while before that hunger comes back. Having great friends feels awesome, and it seems to fill you up. Being in love is intoxicating and really seems to work to satisfy that hunger. Having lots of money or a great job feels good and kind of works. Getting the grades, making the team, winning the game, getting the guy or the girl, accomplishing your dreams, these all feel so good, and they feel like they are going to work to fill us up and tell us who we are. But then something terrible happens. We get hungry again. We don't fill up as easily as before. We need more this time. Friends let you down. Love grows cold. There's a bad breakup. The economy crashes. You get fired, you get hurt, you fail a test, you lose a game, and your dream dies. Who are you now? What do you do when you're hungry? where can you go? Your heart has a seemingly insatiable need to be filled with love and worth and so many other things. Where can you fill up forever? Did you know that the miracle of Jesus feeding the 5,000 is the only one that's recorded in all four of the Gospels? Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John tell us about different miracles, but this is the only one they all mention. In other words, it's extremely important. It's vital. There's something going on here that we must understand. One really weird thing about this story is that even though all the Gospels talk about it, none of them really explain exactly how Jesus multiplied that one little lunch to feed thousands. They just say he looked up to heaven, he gave thanks, he broke it, and then he handed it to the guys. But like, how did it happen? Did he break it and then there were two whole pieces? Or we just want to know. How did he do it? What did it look like? But they don't tell us. And I actually think there's a good reason for that. You see, if they told us how Jesus did this, we would try to replicate it ourselves. You know we would. We would try to repeat it, bottle it up, and sell it. But we can't. We can't understand what Jesus did that day. We are all so desperately hungry and we need to be filled, but we can't do anything about that on our own. Only Jesus can fill us up. And we need to go to him every time to get what we need. You can't feed yourself, and nothing you try to do will ever really satisfy your hunger. But Jesus can miraculously and eternally give us what we really need. And by the way, he wants us to come to him for it. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 9 and 10. My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Come.